Why'd y'all scare her off? Let's pray together. Thank you, Father, for letting us come together, and thank you for asking us to partner in this vital mission. And as we think tonight about reaching people who need to know you, we ask you to help us to be wise. In Jesus' name, amen. Two classes left. Come on, guys. There are spots. You just have to buy them. And we'll just wait impatiently for you to do that. Come on in. Come on in. Is he coming? I got a spot right there.
One more's coming.
Yeah, there's one right there. I just gave it away, second time. So I have been working from a topic list that I've created, and I would just, over the course of the class, go back week after week and say, okay, what do I want to explore this week? Because as you can imagine, far more topics to consider than there is time to consider them. And so time is becoming our problem. We have two classes left. We have tonight, and then Tech Talk next week, and then our final class. And I do have something in mind for that last session. So, but I still had topics on my list. And so rather than choosing, I decided that we would make tonight a buffet class. So just imagine just imagine it is a spiritual golden corral, and I'm gonna kind of walk you past the items that are available. Was that too vivid?
That was
gross. I'm gonna kind of walk you past a few topics, and we'll see how they land. I'm gonna pick them up.
Movies is better.
What's that?
Movies is better than golden corral. Neither one's great, but Gold Corral's gross.
There is no such thing as a good buffet.
Pretty much.
And see what you guys are interested in. I probably shouldn't have used that figure because I think I'm letting us wander off. Anyway, I want to begin by talking about the problem of evil. In the reading I did for class, this comes up a lot. These are the two Barna surveys that I've referenced a couple of times over the course of class. And so the first one was from 2016 that asked about non-Christians' barrier to faith. And you notice that the very top of the list is this one. I've had a hard time believing that a good God would allow so much evil or suffering in the world. And you can see how it's broken down by age group, but for the most part, you're talking about like one out of five to maybe one out of three people that you and I are interacting with who are not religious people struggle with this. It is first on the list. And then this from 2023 on the other side, notice human suffering on the far right side is listed by 30% of the people who have no faith as one of the things that makes it hard for them to believe what Christians believe. And then I wondered about this one at the bottom, because 13% of them also listed unanswered prayer. And I'm just suspicious that maybe some of that unanswered prayer has to do with problems of suffering and trouble in life. So one of the reasons I've kicked this bucket down the road and haven't brought it up to now is because we do talk about this a lot, right? Surely along the way, I know that Jeff and I have done a couple of text talks on it. We talk to the kids about it all the time, and I didn't want to be redundant. But at the same time, I want you to be aware that when you're interacting with a coworker and having a conversation, it's likely that this is a hang-up for them. And maybe somewhere along the way, you're going to have to answer this question. I don't know how a good God could allow so much evil and suffering in the world. So here's what I'd like to recommend to you about that. Before you start talking to someone about this topic, you need to ask a question. And I think that question should be something like, tell me why you say that. Why do you want to ask that? And please don't say, because you want to know the answer. Why do we want to know the answer to what is driving you to raise that objection?
So you don't make assumptions?
Yeah, but why don't we want to make assumptions about this? And I'm still digging a little deeper.
You open up like a different can of worms, too. Like you open up more problems if you just assume what you think you know the problems are.
Yeah, so unpack that a little too. Why might that open a can of worms if we don't know really where it's coming from?
Well, you want to, I mean, you're trying to find out what their frame of reference is with regard to evil and the reason for evil in the world and
right.
How much of it is because God's allowing it versus what man's choosing to do. And
you're also trying to find out if it's personal. And, you know,
or
it's a very different, real difference. And if someone had, if they're suffering that they've experienced or a close family member has experienced, versus just general suffering that they see on the news, maybe in other parts of the world. I mean, it's very different, I would think. You know.
Yes. So I want y'all to think about what Greg is saying. There's a difference between suffering being a personal thing and suffering being an academic or logic issue for someone. And I think it can come at least from those two directions, maybe from other directions. For example, some people say that, and it's purely academic to them. They saw a YouTube video where someone said, I have a hard time believing a good God would allow so much evil in the world. And they're thinking, well, that's a pretty good argument, and it'll let me sleep with my girlfriend. I think I'll embrace that idea. Don't think it isn't that shallow sometimes. But listen, that's just academic. That isn't about their life or what they've experienced. There's no emotion connected with that. As opposed to someone who said, yeah, when I was 8 years old, I watched my mother die of cancer. Right? Do you see how that's a very, very different thing? And so I have to tell you, you want to know this because how you answer it is going to be very, very different. Which of the two is easier to answer?
Academic.
Yes. Why?
Not personal.
It's not personal. You're not dealing with emotion. That just has a way of clouding our thinking. So let's start with the easy one. When I'm dealing with someone who just raises this as an academic issue, I just try to show them gently, you heard me say that right? Gently, the logical flaw with that argument. There is a fundamental logical flaw with the argument that I can't believe in a God who allows so much evil in the world. Does anybody know what it is?
Free will.
Free will is an element of the problem. I'm even poking around for something more fundamental.
Man.
Sin. Okay, you're going to have to help me.
Like,
I don't know if that was an expression
humans,
or your...
Yeah, like, I mean, human in general. Human people. Humans. Man. Women.
And I'm still waiting for him to take me a little further.
I mean, man is flawed. Man themselves are flawed. Yeah. I mean, man is sinful. Man does bad things.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, inherently, God is not evil or creates evil. His counterpart does, the one that they've not considered.
Right.
Satan.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Would it be from the point of view that you don't believe in God, but yet you're expressing that there must be a God because he's allowing the evil, you're saying, in the world. So,
their argument is there cannot be a God because there is so much evil in the world. Do you see a problem? What's the problem?
Is it that because there's good in the world, you could also argue that there is a God because there's good in the world?
One wonders how we even know what the two are without God. Here's the problem. Evil in the world has nothing to do with whether or not God exists.
Right.
You with me on that? Now, it may tell us something about the nature of God. It may mean that God is evil, cruel, tyrant, which is possible, but it doesn't mean he doesn't exist. That's like saying, I don't like the person in the White House, therefore they aren't the president. What's wrong with that argument?
They are.
It's logically unsound. How they're running the country has nothing to do with whether or not they're in charge. That's a whole nother category. Same thing with this. How God allows the world to run has nothing to do with whether or not God exists. It's a whole different silo of evidence. And I'll illustrate that for you. When we talked about the question of the existence of God, I told y'all one of the reasons I believe in God is DNA. I don't think nature can do DNA. I think that argues that some kind of intelligent, powerful, wise being had to be behind that, right? That's an evidence for God. We can argue about that. The fact that bad things happen in the world does not do anything to diminish that evidence. You still got to account for DNA. You see what I'm saying? It's a completely different thing. What they're really talking about is the nature of God and using that to deny the existence of God. By the way, if God's a mean God, you better really get to know him and figure out how to make him like you. Right? Now, that's you got to run with that a little further and deal with how we know God isn't an evil God. But saying, I don't like God because of this, or I don't think God exists because of this, doesn't work. It's not logically sound. And so when someone makes that argument on an academic level, that's just typically where I try to push back on them. Okay? What's the other possibility? If it's not academic,
well,
personal.
Oh.
Yeah. Have any of y'all dealt with someone who rejected God because of tragedy in their life? Y'all ever had to deal with that situation? I had this pretty early on for me as a preacher. I had baptized this lady, and she wanted me to study with her husband. And so first time we sat down together, he just looked across the table at me and said, "You won't get anywhere with me." He said, "I don't even care if God really exists." He said, when I was 16 years old, my mother died. And he said, if there is a God, he certainly knew a 16-year-old needed his mother. And since he let my mother die, if he does exist, I hate him. I don't care about serving. That was personal. So what do you do with that?
What did you do with that?
Probably didn't handle it well. It was a long time ago. I was very young and inexperienced.
Well, I think you start by empathizing with their situation.
Right.
I mean, that's hard for anybody to go through.
Yes. So a couple of things about that, and thank you for saying that. I think it's really important. That's not a good time to drop the logical argument on them, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So what I want to do at the very first is validate their grief and their anger. Wow, that's terrible. I'm really sorry that that happened to you. And I hope that's what I said to him. Because that ought to be the first thing that we say. In fact, now watch this and see if you agree with this. I would go a step further. I would say, I really understand why you couldn't be mad at God about that. Is it okay to say that?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, if we're honest, we've all probably been perturbed, and maybe it's the word, with God at some point in time in our life.
We're not honest about that.
Yeah.
But the great thing is the Bible is. So read the book of Psalms, like Psalm 73, when Asaph's mad at God and saying, why is my neighbor getting rich? And he doesn't care about serving you. And I'm doing my best to serve you, and I'm in a mess down here. Where are you, right? Psalms is great about that. Things I love about the Psalms, it's inspired griping at God sometimes, right? Now listen, I'm not signing off on that and saying it's a good, healthy thing. I'm just saying it is sometimes. People get angry and frustrated with God. And so I think it's okay to acknowledge that for people. I get that. Okay, so we sympathized, grieved, validated, but what's next? How do you talk to someone about this?
I mean, personally, when I've dealt with this.
Have you dealt with this?
Yeah, but I talked about my mom's cancer.
Mm.
Because.
Why?
Because I was mad. Because I didn't want to. I thought prayer was dumb. Like, why my brain, like, why'd she even get in the first place?
Mm. She's a good lady. Yeah. Why did God let that happen?
Right, so you're able to. It was helpful for them to understand that, you know, I was 18, just going off to school. I was in a really weird spot in life, and I was dealing with this.
Yeah.
You know? So I understand where you're coming from, and you can help them see how you got to where you are.
Yeah, I've been there too.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Walk them out in their shoes, and then you can explain them out of that, perhaps. But you have to be there in order for them to know that it's real.
Thank you. I really do think it's important to validate them. I really, really do. And then what Mark said, if you can add to that, I've been in that place too. Other thoughts?
I'd want to know prior to that, what was their belief? Did they believe in God prior to that? What was their walk like?
Yeah, did it make you stop believing? Thank you. Other thoughts? Yes, ma'am.
We all have choices, and we either choose to, you know, the old saying, you choose to be bitter or better. When Daryl had his cancer, we've gone through it like 4 times, and, you know, I just found myself going, God, I know you are sovereign, you're in control. Help me learn from this. More than anything, if we're going to the hospital and the ambulance, okay, God, who are you going to give me the opportunity to witness to?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I kept a journal, and there were so many precious stories of 2:30 in the morning, you know, a nurse came in, and I was reading my Bible, and she said, Miss Morgan, why are you up? And I said, he's having a hard night.
Yeah.
And I said, so I just needed some time with me and the Lord. And she talked with me. I mean, it was beautiful. And, you know, we all have opportunities. And it's just how we walk it.
Yeah. So that circles back to that idea of being able to relate to people. And some of this, pardon what I'm about to say, is mileage. I think you were getting at that a minute ago. We got to live a little and experience some things before we're able, I think, to really empathize with people who have suffered like that, who are going through that. One of the things that, oh, I'm sorry. I'll give you the last word before I start rambling.
Okay. I was just going to say, too, that I think a lot of times, I don't know how it is with preachers, but I know me being, well, it might be different. Me being layperson or whatever, you know, you might go in with somebody talking and think, I'm going to talk to them tonight. I am going to turn them around. They are going to believe in God tonight. I'm going to have this wonderful talk, and it's just going to inspire. Oh! And that doesn't always happen. You got to have patience. And I know there's sometimes we got to make this happen because your soul's at risk. But there's also a reality that it may not happen. So it may be, gosh, I totally understand what you're going through. That is awful. And you may have to table it for a while, or you may give them an example of what you've gone through. When I was up in Dallas, you know, I just told Alicia a couple of things and just let it sit with her, and I hope it does. I told her, you know, some of the times that I really felt God's presence, or that I felt like I just really knew God, and I explained those situations to her, and I said, gosh, one day I don't know, I just hope you are able to have that overcoming feeling, whatever it is, you know, just so you can feel that love, and left it at that.
That's the, from the tactics books, those of you who've read it, that's the stone in the shoe principle. What you're really saying is these things take time sometimes, and we've got to be gentle with people and help them work through that. Thank you for adding that. One of the complaints I have with what you're looking at on the monitors is unbelievers, I think some of them knowingly and willfully, try to make this sound like it's simple, like suffering is simple. If there really is a good God, there just wouldn't be evil in the world, right? If bad things are happening, God should just intervene and put a stop to all that. They make it simple. What thinking people recognize is that suffering is actually not simple at all. It's extraordinarily complicated, in part because there are so many very, very different reasons people suffer, right? Y'all see that? Sometimes people suffer, I wouldn't say this to a grieving person, but I'll say it in this class, because they're stupid.
Oh.
Right?
None of us are stupid like that. We've
right?
never done anything.
Right? No, we all
I know, I'm joking.
Yeah, and so everyone can relate to that. We just do dumb stuff, like the friend of mine who had driven her car for 5 years and never checked the oil. My dad nearly fainted when she told him that. That is not smart, right? And there will be suffering that goes along with that. And so the question is God supposed to intervene? I don't know, make her check her oil? Or check it for her? Or miraculously work on her engine? I mean, what were people thinking here? You see the problem? And so y'all brought up free will. That's another piece of this. Actually, God could override every choice we make that might bring suffering or evil or harm into the world. He could do that. But then it's not free will, is it? Now I'm just a robot living out my program. So it's complicated. The other interesting piece of this, and I think this is often overlooked in the conversation, is we forget the times that suffering was good for us. We forget the times that suffering was good for us. We don't like to think about that. Mark doesn't like to think about the fact that Mark has grown because his mother had cancer, and his faith is richer and deeper because he went through a period of doubt. And I would much rather say, oh, all of my lessons were learned when I was standing on top of the hill victorious. A few. Most vivid, powerful lessons I've learned in life were when I was in the trenches of adversity. Someone says, why did God let me suffer like that? Oh my goodness, because it made me stronger and better. In fact, I didn't know this. I read a book that Philip Yancey wrote on suffering. I didn't know this truth. You know that there are people in the world that are incapable of feeling pain? Did y'all know that? I did not know that until I read this book. That there are people in the world that are not able to feel pain. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad.
Why? Would you love to never have to feel pain in your body?
It's a symptom. You wouldn't know.
Sorry?
It's a symptom to warn us of something.
It helps you set limits.
Yes, yes. I don't like the way it hurts when I actually brush my hand against the burner on the stove. But the fact that I feel pain makes me do what?
Do it again.
Yes. I retract my hand, not burn it up, right? Yeah, these people suffer terribly. And by the way, if their appendix is about to rupture, they die. Because they don't know. We forget that pain is a useful instrument put in us by God. Right? And then the ultimate thing everybody gripes about is dying. Which is interesting, isn't it? Why is it interesting that people get mad at God about dying?
Does it feel like it's not there?
It's not necessarily dying. It's dying early.
Yeah.
Early next to what they think it should be.
Which is interesting. So is it really that we're mad about dying, or we're mad about the timing of dying? Anthony, you had your hand up.
I'm old man. You can't do that.
You raised your hand. I didn't want to pass
anyway,
over.
Anyway, basically along the same line that, as what has already been stated. And so I'll leave it at that.
Okay. All right. One of the things that I try to gently say to people who are wrestling with is, everyone dies. And so it's just an issue at what age we're going to get mad at God. And frankly, this man I was studying with was angry because his mom died when he was 16, right? What if his mom died when he was 76? Would it be less sad and tragic?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Maybe a little, yeah, because they've lived a long life.
So the relationship is less dear and precious because we had more time together?
I wouldn't say it's less precious.
We reason it easier if the person's older.
Why?
Because we know they're going to die.
Yeah. Older.
But we're all...
But you had more time together.
Which makes the relationship dearer and more precious. Since I've been mean to my wife all along in class, I will tell you, the longer we've been married, harder it is to think about being without her. I think it is unfair to act as though the longer we live life, somehow death is less brutal. There are people sitting in this classroom tonight with broken hearts and sensitive places over loved ones who died old because they were just so precious to you, precious because of the time. And so the reality is that death comes for everyone, and we're quibbling over, what, a couple of decades maybe? And what's that compared to the current eternity? I think the thing to say to people about all of this is that everybody's going to die. Whether you're an atheist or a believer, everybody dies. The timing is beyond our control. John 11:25 is the answer. It's the only one who's come to earth and proven he had anything to do with power over death. John 11:25, Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. And that's what we need to preach to a world who is going to die. Every one of us. The answer is not to get mad about the timing. No one controls that. Believers have an answer in the face of death. If you reject God, what do you have? A hole in the ground at best. Right? So the truth is, Jesus is the only one that offers us a way out of this. Yes, ma'am.
Do you think there's sometimes it's about not having someone to blame? If my mother dies because a drunk driver hit her, I can be angry at the drunk driver. Mm-hmm. But if my mother dies because she just happened to get cancer, I don't have anyone to blame. Is that sometimes the reason why God becomes the target?
I think the answer of that is really a tangled knot. I think there are a lot of reasons people get angry about death. Maybe some of it is guilt, right? Like, I should have been there for her more. I should have taken care of her better. Or we should have spent more time together. I shouldn't have moved off to take that job, yada, yada, those kinds of things. Other times, I think it's deeper and more profound. Realize, guys, that the bizarre thing happening in our world today is most people live their lives without an exit strategy. They're just not ready for death at all. And I think when it comes, what you're talking about really is this powerful emotional response. And come on, when you go to a funeral, I don't think it's really the dead that bother us. What bothers us when we go to a funeral?
We're still alive.
We're going to die.
Yes, come on. If everyone's heart was laid open at the funeral, it wouldn't be about the person in the box. It would be about the fact that I am going to be in the box. And that's terrifying to most people. That's the wise man's point in Ecclesiastes 7:2. It's better to go to a house of mourning than go to a house of feasting, because this is the end of every man, and the living take it to heart. Yes, sir.
You said that most people don't have an exit plan.
Yes.
A lot of people aren't equipped to understand suffering and how to deal with suffering.
Correct, exactly.
Yeah. And the good and the bad that comes along with it.
That's
and
right.
Like she said a minute ago, you got to blame somebody. And in fact, they should blame themselves for not becoming equipped to deal with it and recognize that life happens.
Yeah.
Timing is irrelevant.
Yeah, and the other piece of that, and I've been kind of reluctant to say this because this is, it's one of those things you never say in the face of death. But the truth is sometimes people die early because they did dumb stuff.
Choices.
I mean, you can't say that. I've done a lot of funerals. I've never said that. Well, he died because he did some dumb stuff. But frankly, I have preached funerals for people who did dumb stuff and died. Very early, I preached a funeral for a young guy who got high and got on the back of the motorcycle, and you don't need me to tell the rest of the story, right? You know how that ended. He did some dumb stuff, and his life was ended early. Should I be mad at God about that? See what I'm saying? So that's why I say atheists want to simplify this. Bad things happen. It's God's fault. Sometimes bad things happen because I did dumb stuff, you see? Yes, sir.
I think sometimes it can also come from a place of selfishness.
Okay.
In the sense of, like, you mentioned the guy that said he lost his mom when he was 16. Something that he needed, 16-year-old that needed their mother. So, like, I can imagine that anger coming from somewhere. Like, if whoever this person was, or I think of maybe sometimes there's a family that loses a mom, it's a dad with three kids or something. Like, they need their mother. And maybe these three kids or that 16-year-old guy grows up thinking, like, this is something that I needed, and now I'm growing up without this guidance, and I'm taken, like, that time is taken away from me, and now I'm growing up disadvantaged to other people. So just kind of,
it's about me.
Yeah.
That actually, thank you for saying that, because it stirs my mind up about another thing, and it gets back to fundamentally, I think that we're dealing with a culture that isn't ready for death. Guys, is death the worst? What does death mean for a Christian?
We go
to be with the Lord, right? And so I think fundamentally the reason this is such a factor for the world is because they don't have anything after this. Life is everything. And so when stuff like this happens and we start getting angry with God, I lost a dear friend of mine, one of my fellow elders in Beaumont in 2011. And boy, it was first time someone really, really close to me had died at the wrong time, right? He was supposed to live a long time. You know what I'm talking about. Live a long time. But he died at 54. It just really, really bothered me. Until it dawned on me. I was quibbling with God over a couple of decades. Right? And he was with the Lord. It's not like my friend was in heaven saying, man, I wish I'd had 20 more years down there. I was quibbling with God for years and he doesn't even want. See how silly that is? And so I think sometimes we're drinking the cultural Kool-Aid, guys, and we're thinking like the world, rather than thinking, this person went to be with the Lord, which is what life is all about. Not getting more time here, it's being there with him. Remember what Paul said in Philippians 1? He desired to depart and be with God, for that is very much better. That's our hope. That's what we're looking forward to. So I think we got to be careful about that. And that's the hope we need to try to pass on to other people. So remember, 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, we need to be ready to give an account for the hope that is in us. And so I think we need to be ready to talk to people about this. I think this is a big one. Okay, where did I see hands? Yes, sir.
Okay, I wrote it down this time. Anyway, it's kind of a combination of the selfishness. Well, it is, if you really look at it, the selfishness that we sometimes have in it. Say, for instance, someone is suffering with cancer, and we're looking at them leaving us. We're not thinking about, you know, if that person dies, They don't have to suffer with cancer anymore. They're in, as we say, a better place if their life is lived according to the Word of God. So who are we moaning for?
Yeah.
And a lot of times we're moaning for ourselves and what we're going to lose, not what they're going to gain.
So it's interesting you brought that up. Because, and I'm afraid to say this, I'm afraid about to open a can of worms. But after my friend died, one of the lessons I took away from that experience was that suffering often helps people die. So I thought about the children of Israel. Remember, they suffered terribly in Egypt, right? And they get out into the wilderness, and they're not out there very long before they say what? As bad as it was, they get out into the wilderness and say, we want to go back. Imagine if everything had been good, if they had lived well in Egypt. How would you have ever got them to the promised land? See the problem? And so, 8 days before my friend died, I went to see his wife. Actually, I went to see him. And she said, you can't see him. He's just bad today. And so I talked to her. And I said, are you ready for him to die? And she said, yeah. I said, do you feel bad? She said, I do. But I don't think it's God's will for him to get better. And he's suffering. And I'm ready for him to die. And man, something clicked in my brain when she said that. And I thought, maybe sometimes God allows suffering at the end because it helps both of us let go. And what is a really hard time in life to let go? You see that? So again, suffering isn't simple. That's a trick of the atheists. It's very, very complicated. And I think sometimes God is at work in our suffering to accomplish good that we don't see. That's what we need to help the world see. Yes, ma'am?
So I'm not challenging you at all. No, I'm really not. It's just that there are going to be people who have this argument, because I hear it. And it's a little bit different than what you've been talking about, but I'm curious to know how you handle it.
Okay.
What about those who rape, you know, a six-year-old kid and the kid dies, or however old, somebody gets raped, horrific, whatever, but definitely children, you know, and if they die, they don't get that experience to overcome their whatever happened, adversity or whatever in life, and to grow from it. And if they're six, are they with God? Are they not? I mean, are they, you know, they haven't been baptized. So, well, hopefully they're with God. But, you know, there's all of this where people who don't believe in God, or even some who do, get so angry because how could he let that happen? I mean, you can understand a person who gets cancer. You can understand a person who does stupid stuff. You can reason all that away. That's hard to reason away.
So, again, thank you for validating the point that suffering is complicated. It's not, you can't just come up with a simple slogan to explain it all away. Atheists are very happy to talk about how many kids will die in Africa today. Sam Harris is pretty famous, you know, for debating believers and wanting us to account for the babies that will die in Africa today. So the question is, if there is a God, and we believe there is, and we believe God loves us, and he does, and we believe he's powerful, and he is, why should a baby ever die of hunger in Africa? Why doesn't God feed the babies? And my response to that is, why are we blaming God for that? Is it that the planet is not able to make enough food to feed the babies? And the answer to that question is no. I can tell you why babies in Zimbabwe die of hunger. I don't know the situation in every country. I do know a little about Zimbabwe. Lots of food goes into Zimbabwe, and what the government does there, a very corrupt government, is it hoards the food and withholds it from the people to get their political obedience. Do what we say, or you will starve to death. Question, why is that God's fault? That's man's fault. Someone said, well, God ought to do something about that. He did. He sent his son to deliver us from those sins and gave us a message so everybody that could follow his son. And someone would say, no, I want God to do something more direct. Like, you got to go in and take out that people. You just remember that the same people say that gripe about God doing that very thing in the Old Testament. Oh, what a horrible God. He came in and wiped out a people. Yeah, he did. And that's not good either. So bear in mind, they're not going to be happy no matter what God does. See what I'm saying? The answer to your specific question is that it is a consequence of free will. If we're not robots, then the downside of that is people are going to do horrible stuff. Here's the problem. If you're an atheist, there's no justice. You know, whether I get justice on this earth or not, somebody kills a child and they never find out who it is. They never got justice, did they? Oh. Yes, they did. God's going to take care of it. That issue will be settled in the end. Only the Christians are the one who had hope in ultimate justice, right? In fact, the truth is it's worse for that. Because for the atheist, if he's right, there's no way to even say that killing a child is wrong. In fact, unbelievers in our culture are slaughtering babies. Problem. So, can I go back to where I started all of this? The atheist argument is that this is simple. It isn't. It's really, really, really complicated. We are going to confront this, and I think we need to be ready to talk to people about it. So we passed by that on the buffet line. Clearly, y'all were interested in that topic. Let me see if I can touch on this next one just a little bit. The other problem I think we're going to run into, I encountered this a lot in my reading. I didn't know if I had enough to make a class out of this. There's a lot of controversy about what it means to love people. In fact, there's a regular accusation made against Christians that we are hypocrites because we do not love people. And I think that becomes a barrier. They say, you say you follow Jesus, but you do not love like Jesus loved. In fact, there is one particular group in culture that labels us as being unloving.
Homosexuals.
The LGBTQ.
Yeah.
I never had those letters straight in my head. I'm sorry about that.
BLT.
Huh? Never had that accusation, and now the transgender group really, really comes from that community towards Christians. In fact, I encountered this. Maybe some of y'all have heard this. I have not heard this before. There is no hate like Christian love. Have y'all ever heard that? Evidently, that's a thing that is said in the homosexual community. There is no hate like Christian love. And so to that community especially, and I think to the broader world that has embraced this lifestyle choice, we are hateful. Why would somebody describe us that way? That's just terrible.
Because we won't give in and
and
be okay with their lifestyle and what they're doing. And
I think that's exactly the problem. I think the problem is that they have equated love. Do you see what the quote says? I don't know who Louise Hay is, by the way. I just found this online. But the disposition she espouses is out there. Love is acceptance. Love is accepting people as they are. Right? So I think we need to ponder how we're going to interact with people with whom we begin in the hole. They think we're hateful, particularly toward homosexual. So the first thing I would suggest to you about that is we need to walk worthy of our calling. And what I mean by that is we need to be very thoughtful about how we talk about people involved in this sin. Do y'all buy that? Do y'all think that's a problem? I wasn't expecting.
You asked two questions.
What's that?
You asked two questions.
Well, you can answer either one or go on your own if you want to. You think this is a problem? And if so, expound.
Wait, what's the problem? Sorry.
That we need to be very careful about how we talk about this issue.
Yes. In some ways, yes.
Is there a problem with how we talk about it?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think we tend to, it comes, if I were on the outside looking in, the way we speak is an attack on the person, not the sin. And it is then taken personally, and that's why it's accepted as seen as hate, because you are attacking me. When I try to separate the two. This is not about, this is the sin, not you, the person.
And how about if we just don't even attack? I think there needs to be some wisdom here, knowing that people have this predisposition toward us. There needs to be some wisdom in how we interact and talk with people about this issue. Plug in Ephesians 4 and verse 29, no corrupt communication, only such a word that edifies according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. Think about that idea. I would recommend when you're talking to people about homosexuality that you try to communicate grief and sorrow and not disgust. Hear me?
Yeah.
Hear what I'm saying? Because I'm going to tell you, I'm disgusted by this sin. I think it's unnatural. I think it goes fundamentally to who we are as human beings. It violates fundamentally who we are. But I need to be very careful trying to reach people who say this, that I think more carefully about how I talk about this. When I talk to people about the problem with homosexuality, I try to talk about the way that it destroys people's lives. By the way, that's just a statistical reality. It's one of the the secrets about this that nobody's talking about. So you can go find the statistics. They are out there. Someone's life is disadvantaged in every way if they choose to live this way. You put yourself at a far higher risk for all kinds of diseases. Women, for example, the most at risk they are to violence, you ready for this? Is in a same-sex relationship. They are the most violent relationships. Go look it up. So the data is out there. You can just pile it up. And I try to start with that because, again, it's grief and sorrow. Somebody who goes down this path, it's like someone who abuses drugs. What's the problem with abusing drugs? There's a lot of suffering down the end of that path. What's the problem with this lifestyle? There's a lot of sorrow and suffering down that path, which is why, now I'm going to bring it back to Scripture, in Romans 1, God says, this is not the natural way to live. When you don't live as you were created to live, it makes messes. So that's the way I would try to communicate that. The second thing I would try to do is work with people on understanding what love really is. By the way, does anybody believe that? Does anybody believe that love is acceptance?
No.
Nobody will consistently follow that. Nobody believes that is true. If your spouse wanted to commit adultery, we'll just love them and accept that that's the life they've chosen. Nobody believes that. If your kid came up and said, I've decided that I'm going to be a drug dealer, nobody would accept that. In fact, if my kid started using drugs, I would do everything I can to get him off of that and not let him live that lifestyle. Why would you do that? Why don't you accept him as he is? Sorry?
Because you love him.
But what does that have to do with it? Why don't you just accept him as a drug user? Because it will destroy him, and we know this. So this is silly thinking. Nobody believes is this apply to child molesters? You see what I'm saying? Be gentle about this. This is one of those slogan things that people kick around and they just haven't thought about that. So if I'm talking to somebody who's talking about love that way, I'm probably going to say something like, that is a very interesting position. Do you think that applies to all lifestyle choices? That's a stone in the shoe. Don't gloat. You just got them. Just let it hang in the air. Does that apply to all lifestyle decisions? Because the answer to that question is no. Nobody believes that. So another problem we need to be working on and thinking about it as we try to extend the bridge.
This really, in talking about this particular topic of homosexuality, this is step two of what they believe. The first one is love is tolerance.
Yes, yeah, tolerance and accepting that however I want to live my life. Which, by the way, nobody believes. We just have to gently help people see that. Okay, we'll be back together in 2 weeks and a couple more things to wrap up. Thank you.